CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, it's Friday. You've made it. Woo-hoo-hoo! The weekend is here. Good morning, everybody. What's happening, Ben?
Hi, Gareth.
Yeah, it's fresh. Fresh like the Friday morning. You know, when it rains in Joburg for the first time in the summer, it washes away all that dust and shit. And you suddenly have a clean city again. And
literally, those are the two factors that need to be washed away the most.
The dust and the shit. Yeah. And look at it. So now suddenly it's clean.
Thoughts and prayers for our rivers, though.
Thoughts and prayers. Oh, man. You know, I live... I've got a river that runs in front of my house. And
it's a lot of dust and shit.
Let me tell you. Like, the first rains come, and it's amazing. Like, it floods, basically. And then the water is this muddy brown. But then... about 2 days after that, all the detritus from upstream is on the banks.
Yeah.
And it's like, I still don't know why, how in the 21st century, people would squat and shit into a river. But it seems to happen.
Well, when it's all you got, I guess that's
what you got. Maybe I'm dumb, right? Because I don't take into consideration the quality of life that some people have. I'm being very ignorant about that.
I think insensitive is probably the word.
Well, then I'm insensitive. Too bad. There are a lot of things in the world that are worse than being a little insensitive, right? Like actually blatantly lying.
Yeah, stealing.
Yeah, I would say those are worse.
Murdering's also a bit unsavory.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I got an inkling that those are not so kosher. Sure. So we've got to the end of crazy week. It's only the 2nd of November and...
Yes, you're right, Gareth. A month from my birthday.
That's correct, Ben. Yeah,
correct.
And a nice weekend ahead. Have you got anything planned for this weekend?
A lot.
What do you got?
Yeah, a lot. Well, it's my girlfriend's birthday on the Sunday, but she's in Cape Town until the Sunday morning. So we're going to do something fun for her birthday on the afternoon. Playing golf tomorrow.
Yeah.
I haven't played golf in, it's been 3 weeks now.
Wow. For you, that's a long stretch.
Yeah, it's a long time, and it's something that does bother me. But I'm going to go out to my mates at my home course. Very excited about that. And got some exciting work stuff, actually, Gareth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it gets to the weekend, and you're like, oh, it's great, I can get some extra time to do some work. Then, no one says that, do they?
No, but that's when you know you love your work.
Yeah.
That's when you know you actually enjoy what you're doing for a living.
Yeah, my partner and I won some business this week. Pretty stoked about that.
Good.
And once it's in the works, I'll tell you more about it. But it's got to do with something I have mentioned before in the show.
Oh, yeah. Sounds very cryptic. You'll tell us when you can.
Yeah, it's going to be bloody exciting. And I hope you're happy too when you see it.
Yeah, good. I'm sure I will be. I'm sure everybody will be. Otherwise, why would you do the work?
Something
you're not going to be proud of.
I mean, look, if it's a piece of crap, then I'd probably give it a skip.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't tell anyone you'd done it.
Yeah, that too.
So speaking of stuff that you've done that you're proud of, I made a little speech yesterday afternoon. I spoke yesterday about the Discovery Leadership Summit that I went to, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I also had a speaking engagement that I had to go to. It was about it was at the Mobile Marketers Association.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are more interested in, you know, the kinds of stuff that ends up on mobile phones than anything else, because they're not involved in television or in billboards or in print magazines.
They're the important people then.
Well, I think so, because that's where the action is, right? And the most important device you have is your phone.
Exactly.
So I spoke about the power of voice and the power of sound. And I actually tied it all together with a number of things. It was called The Rise of the Voice-Activated World. And, you know, ultimately, thanks to Siri and Cortana and Alexa, we're going to be talking to our devices more than anything else. That'll be the main means of interacting with technology in the future, certainly in the very near term and in the middle term.
Which is good, because it would encourage you to speak properly as well.
Yeah. It's also the way that we talk to each other. It's the way that we understand each other. I went into this whole thing about how in the beginning there was the Word. That's from the Bible.
Yes.
God is very explicit about the fact that He brought the world into existence by speaking it into existence. So speech, and you know, you speak to a lot of these people who are in cognitive behavioral therapy. You speak to people who are in metaphysics, and they talk about manifestation. People speak things into their existence. You speak your reality into existence. In order to make things happen, you have to will them into existence, think them to into existence is that whole secret thing, I suppose. But then you have to, in order to action it, in order to make it start to happen, you have to say it. Like, if you don't ask, you never get, right?
Sure.
So the power of speech is very evident to most people. And even in woo-woo metaphysical terms, it's evident to people that when you say something, if you're one of those people who's constantly putting out bad negative things come to you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So speech has a very real effect in the measurable world, in the physical world, but also in the spiritual world. People who say, you know, they don't swear, for example. Some people don't use violent language. Some people avoid negativity in their language because they find that if they speak it into existence, it becomes their reality. But anyway, I went into this whole thing about that, and then I spoke about how the voice is the best way for us to connect with our devices. Ultimately, I said the other day, the best use of Siri I have is when I say, "Hey Siri, what's the time?"
"It's 6:13.
See? I still think that's great.
No button pressing.
No, when I'm lying in bed and I need to know what the time is, you know, normally you'd go, you'd rub your eyes, you'd reach over, you'd fumble, drop the phone by mistake, because you're not at your best first thing in the morning. Now Siri will tell me.
But how many times in life, you know, you have to ask strangers sometimes for the time?
Uh-huh.
There was a time when that was a thing.
You have to ask the DJ on some stupid radio station.
What's the time?
Oh. Now you can ask her. And this is powerful because it's going to become the main means. And remember, voice recognition is getting better and better. You do have these devices. Some people are okay with it, keeping a device in their house that listens to them all the time. For all I know, this device of mine is listening all the time.
It is.
And that's okay.
Because you've enabled the microphone.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, yes.
And I'm okay with that.
How often in a conversation of here is one is someone's Siri gone off?
Mm-hmm.
And all we're not talking. Yeah. Always listening.
It'll eventually, I mean, it might become a major problem.
So I mean, Gareth, my computer's even listening. I just said I've got some new business. Boom, Jaguar XJ advert.
Oh, really?
In my face. No, not that much business. Jeepers.
Anyway, it was a fun discussion, and we did some questions afterwards, which was interesting. And I had a very, very good time. Met some of the people from the Mobile Marketers Association. There were some of the big head honchos in, you know, marketing and advertising, particularly digital advertising. So that was my afternoon. And as a result of having to speak there myself, I missed out on seeing Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Oh.
Yeah, well, you know. I mean, I would have enjoyed it. Obviously, I would have, because Bill is a terrific speaker. He's a very charismatic guy. He's got a terrific sense of warmth and empathy, and he's a superior communicator. He really is. Every time I've ever seen him, and I had the privilege once of introducing him at an event in New York, I've always found him to be the kind of guy you'd like. I want him for a grandfather, or I'd like him for an uncle, or I'd like him for a dad. He's that kind of guy, you know. He's a very approachable, amenable, nice dude. Obviously, you scratch the surface, he's a politician.
Yeah.
He's just a very, he's a very adept communicator as a politician, and therefore it masks some of his more, let's say, more dodgy personality aspects, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a good guy. By the way, if you're wondering where Sia is today, he is in Port Elizabeth, so he's not going to be joining us. He's on this project that we're doing at the moment, and he did call me this morning early from PE. So I said to him, "How's it looking there, Sia?" "Well, it's raining." And, you know, Sia likes everything, so for him to be downcast about the raining.
I'm so selfish. They've got massive water problems at Eastern Cape, and Sia makes it about himself. Well, at least he's consistent.
Anyway, to go back to the Discovery Summit, I really enjoyed what Adrian Gore had to say. There were some great talks. Professor Clayton Christensen, a little disappointing, only because I didn't really gain any tremendous insights. You know, you don't from these things very often. Sometimes they just affirm things you already know.
Mm.
Sometimes they change your mind about something. And then the best case scenario is you learn something completely new that you didn't know before.
Yeah.
Adrian Gore, to me, was really, really interesting. He he put out a very good argument for why it's actually a great time to invest in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And he used statistics, and he used psychology, human psychology. He spoke about the stuff that they have been generating in terms of the huge piles of data that they've got at Discovery. And, you know, while we're talking about that, it's worth mentioning that we have done two series with Discovery. The first one is already out. It's called Smart Money. And there's another one coming out soon that really give voice to a lot of the information that they gather. Just think about what a huge health insurance provider they are. Forget about the fact that they're launching a bank and they do all these other things too. They have enormous amounts of information about the health of South Africa.
Well, they changed it. They were the original disruptors of the industry.
Right. So he has the access that very few of us have to so much good and useful information. And what he did is put together it was a half an hour. He could have gone on for longer. I would have listened. Just sketching the scenario that while things are challenging in South Africa at this time, he said what we are absolutely the worst at is being accurate and changing our minds. So South Africans are stupidly stubborn, and we have a very pessimistic outlook.
Mm.
And I thought that was interesting because it's something we've spoken about lots. You know, on this show we often talk about how South Africans complain a lot.
Sure.
Which is true. We love to complain. Black, white, women, men, young, old, rich, poor, we all love to complain in South Africa. We love to complain about the government. We love to complain about our history. We love to complain about the finances of the country. We love to complain about our own finances. We just moan. And if you go to a braai, or you go to a dinner, or you go to a staff meeting at any big company, you'll see the same things raising their ugly heads. We are notoriously pessimistic. In fact, in the scheme of countries, he plotted a graph. We are one of the most inaccurate. In other words, we often get it wrong as to how bad our situation is. Look, we all know, and we talk about this every day, human lives are getting better and better and easier and easier.
Exactly.
We halved poverty between 2000 and 2012. Halved it. On wow. Planet Earth, poverty was halved.
That's a lot of people's lives changing.
We don't take these things into consideration. Why? Because we are primed, and this was the thrust of his speech, we're primed to look for negative pointers. Mm-hmm. We're primed to look for danger. That's what we were taught on the savannah as apes. When we were primitive humans, we had to process negative signals much faster, and we had to prioritize them, or we would die. We would be eaten by a leopard. We would fall off the edge of something. We would swing from the wrong tree, and a branch would break. We are constantly on the lookout for negative things that will affect us in a bad way. That's why we love bad news.
Mm.
We don't necessarily look for because we want bad news, but we are primed by evolution to consider bad news first. And as a result, we love to complain because that shows that you're intelligent, that you're taking in information around you and weighing up the dangers so that you can make sure you're ready if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
But it has the effect of making you very, very pessimistic.
Completely.
And South Africans have the lowest scores in terms of pessimism. We are extremely pessimistic about our own futures, even though we have enormous progress to rely upon. How many people have come out of poverty in this country? How many houses have been built? How many people now have running water and electricity? The facts speak for themselves, and you can look them up. They're indisputable in terms of the fact that we are not in decline, first of all, in South Africa, and second of all, as a broad humanity. We're not. People are focused on, but the poor are still poor, and, but the rich are getting richer, and we're all obsessed with what each other have or don't have.
Yeah.
Actually, none of that stuff matters. The objective facts are that things are getting better. Day by day, things are improving. Of course, we've had to deal with hideous things like AIDS, like state capture.
Jacob Zuma.
Well, exactly. Like
EFF.
Yeah, well, the latest crises around land expropriation and what that's done to the economy. But by and large, he says, stop it. Because what you're doing is you're driving yourself into a spiral of negativity.
Completely. But that's what people will say. They go, oh, but Gareth, what about the crime and the corruption stuff? But we can't let that stuff own us. Because if we sit back and we just go, oh, I can't wait to leave this place. Okay, great, but that's not helping anything. If you're on the back foot all the time, guess what? You're going to be on the back foot.
Well, here's the point. Exactly what you're saying is the conclusion of this discussion. That is, if you are pessimistic and you decide, well, the world is unsafe, it's an awful place, there are only a couple of courses of action for you. You can either leave and go to Mars.
Mm-hmm. That's very expensive.
Or you can stay in your house and never interact with other people and try your best to defend your position. And you ultimately will see a downward curve, but you'll be able to mitigate that to some degree. You certainly won't see an upward curve. And then there are those people who get out there and start companies when... You know, we met those Alpha Code people this week.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine starting an insurance company now in this context? There are a ton of these insurance companies, and some of them are big gorillas, and they will knock you right out of the ballpark because they have money, they have resources, they have people.
Lawyers.
Yeah. They will take you down. To start an insurance company like those two that we met on Wednesday, and go and listen to the podcast if you haven't heard it, that's brave as hell. They don't have investors. They're doing it all themselves. They're using their experience that they gained in, I think they were at FNB Insure before. I mean, that's brave. I sat next to, at this conference, Discovery yesterday, I sat next to Paul Harris. Paul Harris.
His ex-FNB?
Yeah, he and Lurie Dippenaar, and they're the guys who started FNB, Rand Merchant Bank. They're the guys who started, they gave Adrian Gore the go-ahead to start with Discovery, for God's sake. He's like a godfather of business, this guy. He sat there next to me. I said to him, listen, we got to talk at some point. We've got to get you on the show. Because people loved Michael Jordan, another one that they found.
Yeah.
And he was, no, I don't know. You know, I don't like talking about myself. So I said, well, don't talk about yourself. Talk about the people that you found. He said, all right, he'll come and do it. But this guy sitting next to me.
It's so refreshing. The guy's hugely rich. He doesn't want to talk about himself.
I know.
He doesn't need the show.
And he sat there and he said to me, it's not about me. You've got to be brave enough to do these things at a time when no one else is brave. That's how people become successful. Mm. Everyone's all reading Francis Fukuyama and Tony Robbins and trying to improve their lives by reading bullshit motivational books. You know what you need? You need to motivate yourself.
Yeah.
Stop being negative. Stop being pessimistic. Stop worrying about everything that isn't your concern. There are certain things you can do nothing about. You can't do anything about Cyril's cabinet meeting this week. There's nothing you can do. Stephen Kosseff from Investec and Patrice Motsepe were on the stage, both talking about Nenegate.
Mm-hmm.
They had to intervene with Jacob Zuma. Remember at Nenegate time?
Exactly.
All those people went to Pretoria. They got in their cars. Drove through to Pretoria and sat there opposite the president and said to him, are you fucking crazy? That's pretty much what they told him. And he backpedaled because he'd never been faced with this wall of powerful opposition. And they weren't interested in his politics. They were saying, this is what you've done to our share price. This is what you've done to the South African economy. If you appoint this bozo, Des van Rooyen, you will ruin all of us, including yourself. So stop it. He's a bozo. And for some reason, they got through to him. Somehow they got through to him and included Cyril at that point. And they spoke very openly about this. You've got to be brave. They didn't go, oh, it's a disaster. I'm selling everything and moving to Australia.
Yeah.
Not that that's a bad thing, by the way. If you want to do that, you go ahead. You do that. If you want to move to Zim, if you want to move to Namibia, there are people moving all over the place. Do what you want. You're allowed to go anywhere. I'm not one of those people who says, oh, I used to be like that. I used to say, see how you have to adapt your position when better information comes.
But, you know, my business partner and I went to Jacaranda yesterday, and we actually had an interview just about this. About
on Jacaranda?
Yeah, on starting a business and why you have to be brave and you have to be bold. And you can't be owned by this be arrested by pessimism because, like, where are you going to go? There's no good time to start a business. There's no good time to make a change in your life. No one's ever said it.
There's never a good time. Think about how many people have kids, and they sometimes they say, oh, well, you know, We didn't know if it was the right time to have. There isn't a right time.
Never a right time for anything.
You just it happens at the right time.
It's only a right
time.
You make it
the right time.
It's only a right time in life to go to the toilet. Everything else, just fucking do it. Because if you miss your opportunity with the toilet, well, it's risky.
Well, we're going to meet a guy a little later on who's a bit of a maverick as well. He's a real businessman through and through. His name is Ken Verriges. I've known Ken for a long time. He was very much involved in so much of the outdoor advertising that you see these days. Taxi advertising was his brainchild. Prime Stars, the big Prime Media billboards used to be his business. And Ken has done lots of other things along the way, and he's currently the brains behind Whiskey Live, which is, of course, this massive event that takes place at the Sandton Convention Center in October, November every year, and it's grown and grown and grown.
Has it grown to the point where they're actually adding things to it now?
Yeah, it's now Whiskey and Spirits Live.
Well,
yes. So now they've got gin and tequila, and they've got, yeah, it's terrific. I went there on... What is it? Wednesday night.
Well, whiskey used to have the monopoly on cool. And yeah. Then people had gin bars, and then there was like vodka. And
now it's rum.
Rum, exactly.
Now rum's a big deal. So we'll talk to Ken about all of that.
Not just the sailors.
No, it's not just the sailors. Arrgh. And Ken will hopefully share some insights with all of us about what's going on in the world of whiskey, and with Whiskey Live in particular, and we'll take your calls and your thoughts. It is 28 after 6. Where is Nolo?
Maybe she took my comment too seriously about going to the toilet.
Yeah, she popped her head in here at like 5 to 6, and I haven't seen her since. She disappeared.
I would offer to go find her, but then you'd be here by yourself.
No, don't worry. So if you're wondering where Sia is, he is in Port Elizabeth. And someone asked about Gord this morning. Let me just go to that quickly because we can try and answer that question. Carmen, she says, "Dear Gareth and team, I love your show, but where the hell is Gord?
Carmen, we said we put him down. Listen.
Should we be worried about him? Keep up the good work. Peace and love, Carmen from Cape Town." Yeah. I mean, Gord has not been in great health.
No.
He was wheezing. He was coughing. He was sick. I played you that voice message he left me.
It was like an old brown Datsun, really.
Disaster.
Yeah. On a hot day. You know when you got to drive around with a water bottle just for your radiator? That was Gord, basically.
So, Carmen, don't worry. He's promised us. He keeps talking to us on Facebook. This is his new means of communication.
Well, he's prolific on Facebook.
Yeah, and he wants to come in next week. So maybe we'll have him here next week. I don't force Gord at gunpoint to come and join us.
No, we don't. But, Gary, just on that, I've got an announcement. As of next week, I shall be on the show from Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Yeah, Tuesdays and Thursdays for Ben.
I won't be here anymore on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
With peace and love. Yeah. We've got a whole different lineup going on from next week, and you know change is part of what we do here.
Yeah.
Leanne Moll will be in Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays.
Yes.
And we're going to have a special guest every week on a Thursday, and then Wednesdays will probably be Gord. So you'll have your fill of Ben and Leanne and Gord and, you know, brilliant people like we had Pumi Mashiho the other day. We may have Nina Hasty from time to time. We're going to have a couple of real old stalwarts as well, people that you know and love, and some new people to keep things interesting. So stick around. Maybe even Tumi Murake will make a guest appearance or two. So stick around. David says, "Hey, Gareth, I'm a teacher. When it comes to adding up the learner's marks or calculating the marks, I use my voice so much faster than a calculator," from David. Yeah. In other words, you say the numbers, and then it makes it make more sense to you. Is that kind of what you're getting at, David? Because if it is, then I understand. Like sometimes I have to go 1,000, and then I've got 200, and then that leaves me 800. And if I don't say it, I can't actually think it properly.
You know, also, when you're typing numbers, it's a ball ache.
Yeah. Yes.
Calculators.
Right.
Who's got one of those?
Well, I use mine fairly regularly. The Unview yesterday, apparently they talked about Matilda, which is this new show that's going on, and people are excited about that. So if you want to hear The Unview, you can go and download that from cliffcentral.com.
Is that with Alan Ford, Gareth?
Uh-huh. And Betty Bangles and Casper are on today for the Casper radio show. That's one of the favorites for a Friday, as well as the sex show with Jonty Searle. And if that isn't enough for you, there's also plenty of other good stuff today.
I saw Jonty yesterday, actually.
Dave Levinson and all of them. Oh, what did Jonty do? What was he? Where did you bump into him?
Well, when it like really, really rains, there's generally a lot of traffic around my area because I live in a road that people try to use to get off from another road.
Uh-huh.
And the traffic backed up for like 200 meters. And Jonty was in front of me and he thought, fuck it, I'm just going to turn around and go somewhere else. And he did the most awkward 7-point turn. in his pimp wagon. And then he went past, and I waved at him, and he had this blank look on his face, and he just waved back. And that's my story.
In his old creepy murk. All right. News stories. You want to know what's in the news? Yeah. Here are some of the big stories this morning. First of all, Cyril Ramaphosa says he's unfazed by Tom Moyane's legal threat. You know, Tom Moyane has been fired. Yes. This is amazing because
Tom, like everyone else, deal with it and move on.
He was SARS commissioner. Everybody said, oh, he's going to be there in unpaid leave or whatever for the longest time. Well, the presidency say Cyril Ramaphosa is unfazed at the prospect of Tom Moyane approaching the courts to challenge the decision to fire him. Ramaphosa has heeded the recommendations of the Nugent Commission, served a notice of termination of services on Moyane on Thursday. Retired Judge Robert Nugent and his assistants unanimously agreed that Moyane does not have the character of a person fit to lead SARS, and he should be removed from office as a matter of urgency. What an awful, awful thing for someone to say about you. This guy doesn't even just take the pain and get out of the room and avoid himself further embarrassment. What does he do? He says he's going to challenge it in court.
Well, it's par for the course, Gareth. People of his ilk, that's all they do. They hang on like ticks until they really can't anymore.
He didn't address any of the issues raised in the report.
No, of course not.
And he says he is well within his rights to approach the court, but the president feels it was necessary that such an action be taken without delay in order to restore the credibility and public confidence in SARS, which is non-existent at the moment. Moyane's attorney has not responded to a request for comment. So there's one more bad egg thrown out of government, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. So Tom Moyane on his ass on the way out. Isn't that good?
I saw a headline saying, Tom Moyane, I am not the devil incarnate. Yeah, but you're pretty shitty at your job, so either way, we don't want you.
York. Terrible. And then Cyril, speaking of Cyril, he was also at this convention, the summit that I was at yesterday. But before that, he went to a gender event. Government has convened a two-day gathering with civil society initiatives in order to find an effort to stop the scourge of abuse. And he has called on the country's judiciary, that's the president, to come to the aid of women. He was speaking at the first day of a national summit against gender-based violence and femicide in Centurion yesterday. And government has convened the two-day gathering with civil society organizations. Most of the speakers have shared similar sentiments about how South Africa's legal framework, especially when it comes to women that have fallen victim to gender-based violence, needs to be reviewed urgently. Ramaphosa agrees that the judiciary needs to improve when handling cases of femicide and abuse. The number of rape and femicide cases that are never prosecuted is something that should come to an end. And he was also heckled by some of the women in the crowd because he seemingly hasn't done enough. But he's trying. I mean, he's not the one going out. And this is often what happens. Government gets blamed for everything, and I blame them for a lot.
Sure.
But Cyril's not going around making sure that judges don't prosecute rape, you know? He's doing his best to administer the executive.
Well, he's doing stuff. I mean, Jacob didn't get out much.
Mm. And when he did speak, he was speaking with forked tongue.
Yes. Well, that's the only tongue he's got.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you know, this happens so much. HP's family say the funeral will take place on Saturday despite a court attempt to halt the service. Can you believe this?
Oh, gosh. Is that mm-hmm. around the wife?
Mm-hmm. Apparently, Lerato, who we heard from in a clip that I played for you just the other day, that's his partner, went the legal route on Thursday, claiming Jabba's family hasn't allowed her to view his remains and has barred her from taking part in the funeral arrangements. He died last week at age 38. Spokesperson for the family, Nkululeko Ngana, has refuted these claims. The issue here has to do with a hard drive document's intellectual property. We're Africans, we're not going to keep people away from a funeral. We know that they used to be together and stuff like that, but it's just not us. That is all they had to say. Who knows what's going on there, but here it is, the vultures are circling. Nobody is covering themselves in dignity at this point. And I wonder how poor HP would have felt about this. Yeah, he might have felt even worse if he'd known that this is how his family were going to behave after the fact. And yes, it does come down to property, a hard drive, you know what that is. They're after whatever little intellectual property they can still glean and make some money out of. And suddenly the memory of HP is nothing but an asset register. Mm. Ugly. Then, what else can I tell you? Oh, sharing the Malusi Gigaba sex video, we know, is a violation of his privacy. And there are more developing stories around this. Social media experts have said that if you are sharing that video, and a lot of people have it on their phones because they're passing it on to everybody else, mm-hmm. not because they like looking at Malusi's junk, could lead to legal prosecution. Apparently, the minister revealed the video was stolen when his phone got hacked 18 months ago. Of course, we don't know whether that's true or not. It's been the topic of discussion since it was leaked on Sunday, and people who share the sex video could again get into trouble with the law if it was illegally obtained. And trust me, forwarding on a WhatsApp group means it's probably illegally obtained. Apparently, the video is a violation of the minister's privacy and could lead to some kind of legal prosecution. Have you still got on your phone, Ben?
I'll have to check. I get sent WhatsApps all day from people.
Do you delete them?
Yeah, whenever spare moments, I do. I finally figured out how that setting is where it doesn't go into your photos.
Mm.
You know, got a new phone, like, it was more cryptic on Android. So you're going through photos like, oh my gosh, there's Malusi Gigaba's cock. I didn't want that. I didn't want that anywhere near my mouth. Delete.
And finally, while we're looking at the news, the other big story of the morning. This is from Adrian Basson. He's written an editorial on the end of white monopoly capital. In January 2016, shortly after a failed coup attempt on the National Treasury by Jacob Zuma, Lord Timothy Bell, advisor to former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and Victoria Gogan, a smart spin doctor working for Bell's outfit Bell Pottinger, jetted into Johannesburg. You remember? Mm-hmm. On their agenda was a meeting with South Africa's number one family, the Zumas, and their best friends, the Guptas. Public versions of this meeting suggest it was attended by Zuma Sr., Duduzane Zuma, his son, the Gupta brothers, Bell and Gogan. Now, the apparent purpose of this meeting was to devise a campaign around economic empowerment of black people that would highlight economic apartheid and distract people. They came up with the term white monopoly capital. And that term has been put to bed by Cyril Ramaphosa in the last week. He said it's absolute nonsense. We've got to move away from this. We've got to start looking at our business people as heroes.
Sure. What will the BLF do now?
I don't even know if they still exist.
The BFLF. I never know which one it is.
It's Black First, Land First, but they just dropped the first F.
Okay.
So it's like Black First is one word, maybe? Black First Land.
Oh.
All right. What do you got for us in the sport, Ben? Should we look at that? By the way, cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, $6,399, and Ethereum at $200. What do you got?
Gareth, it is the big test match, Springboks versus the English. We've got the Telkom Knockout Cup quarterfinals, and I totally forgot what the other thing was. Oh, Proteas. Proteas are playing Australia. Rusty Rasmus has named his team. It looks exciting. It looks exciting, like a pizza on a Friday after a healthy week. That's what it looks like. One thing, though, which is getting quite a bit of conversation on social media, is that Warren Whiteley will be playing number 8. Dwayne Vermeulen playing number 7. Get into this in a second. Let me just run through the whole team. Damien Willemse is playing at 15. Now, remember, none of the overseas base box, as in the ones based in English, European kind of clubs, are allowed to play in this one because outside of the international window. So Damien Willemse comes in for Willy LaRue at fullback. Spoon Kwasi is back from injury, so he'll play there instead of Chesson Colby, who did pretty well, I thought, at number 14. Jesse Creel and Damien De Anandi will be your centre pairing. Apua Janchi, the maybe find of the season, maybe find of the last two seasons. He's number 11 still. And then Andre Pollard, and number 9 is Ivan van Sale. Who's he? Get to that in a bit. And then, of course, Warren Whiteley, Dwayne Vermeulen, Siya Kolisi, that's your loose trio. And then Peter Sefzatoy, Ibn Esabeth on the locks. And then Franz Malherber, Malcolm Marx, and Stephen Kitsoff with the ginger emoji on the end there. That is the starting lineup. Bongi Obanami, Thomas Tatoy, and Wilco Lowe provide some decent front row replacements. And then Achia Sneyman, Lourdes Diaga, solid locking replacements there. And then Embrose, Rudy Page, Papir will be your scrum off on the bench with Elton Junchies and Andre Esthazen, the other back replacements. Some interesting things to look at in this team. So just looking at that whole Warren Whiteley at number 8. Now, Rusty obviously believes that Warren Whiteley is very tactically astute and might be a great link with the big burly locks and a guy like Dwayne Vermeulen, who obviously plays to the ball so well. And he is just, I mean, he showed his worth in that English series in June here in South Africa. But many people are saying this, if Dwayne Vermeulen is the best number 8 that we could possibly have in the green and gold, well, why not just play him at 8? It's a fair point. Obviously, Franco Mostert's not playing this week because of that whole international window thing. So that's why Peter Cetatori is gone into the number 5 jersey. I think World Cup-wise, when you think 95 World Cup, Mark Andrews was a lock. He played number 8. You always work on your set pieces in World Cups, nice and tight kind of rugby there. And the lineup options just give the box more strength than anyone else in that position. So you would think that Peter Cetatori, who's done so well at flank this recent matches, he does prefer playing flank than lock. You would think he is your ideal number 7 because he's a legit lineup option. And the guy's work rate is incredible. His heart is just huge. It's just everything you want from a number 7, which is your blindside flank in South Africa. And of course, in New Zealand and other countries, number 6 is your blindside flank. Now, Siya Kolisi, he's the open sider. He is the captain. He's there. He's money. So, I think come World Cup, we won't see Warren White at number 8, but maybe this is his last chance. Rob Howing of Sport 24 wrote a good article about this, in that it's a lovely idea to have White at number 8, but he definitely doesn't have the firepower and the oomph that Dwayne Vermeulen does have, so if you're looking for a ball-carrying number 8, but again, it's just so nice to have these options, and that's what Rossi's got right now. And of course, as fans, after a couple of beers, we all think we know what's best. But Rossi works with these guys every single day. He's got a vision. He has led these guys to a victory over the All Blacks. Almost 2, actually, if they choke the crap out of it at Loftus. So that is something to look forward to in the forward pack. But, I mean, still, there's no beast. He's obviously injured. He's not on this tour at all. I think we've got great front rowers nowadays. Malcolm Mark's probably the best in his position. He does have the odd bad day with lineouts, but it's just looking so good. And the fact that Arkias, Snyman, Lutiago, that's your on your bench for the locks. Plus, you've got Franco Mostert coming to this mix. The Bok forward pack is looking solid. And again, that's where you base all success on in rugby. And going ahead to the World Cup looks bloody exciting. The backs, of course, well, if Andre Pollard can stay as the pivot, that'll be great. But what's happening at number 9? Well, Faf de Klerk, who is the far and away the best scrum half in SA rugby, he's not allowed to play on this tour. Ivan van Sale, he's a Bulls player, as is Ambrose Papier. Now, Ambrose Papier has been on the bench for Faf the whole time, this whole season, and he came off with splinters in his arse at Loftus. And, well, what chance did he have to really make an impression? Not much. But the fact that he isn't starting for this match after being the number 2 for so long is kind of strange. It's like, same with Rudy Page. He was always there. He was never going to start, but he was always at cover on the bench. Mm-hmm. Is it for quotas? You never want to say that about a player. You never want it to hang over your head. But surely the guy should get a chance. Ivan van Sale is seen as a more perfect fit for the conditions. Fair point. Could be it. Again, we must show more faith in our coaches rather than just the cynicism. So that is interesting to see how that's going to play out. Louis Schroeder is on tour. He has been pretty solid for the Sharks and has gone on Bok tours previously. But again, that would be the only question mark for me. Otherwise, that backline looks solid. I'd really love Sboon Kosi coming back. I think he's a fantastic player. Everyone makes a big noise about it, Piwi Janchi. But Sboon Kosi, I think, in his own way, he's a little bit stronger. He's a little bit more abrasive with the ball in hand. And Damon Willemsen, well, he is the future. Whether he's playing at 10, whether he's playing at 15, bloody good player this. And that match will kick off at 5 o'clock on Saturday. Hmm. The English team, well, it's no point really getting into. It's just full of people who may or may not have grown up in England. And, well, they'll be good. They'll be good, no doubt about that. Dylan Hartley is back. He didn't come to South Africa in June, so he'll be the captain. Co-captain with Owen Farrell. These guys have got 2 captains. What the hell's that about Eddie Jones? Anyway, Eddie Jones will be no doubt looking to spin things around and just be the general gobshite that he is. Win or lose, he'll say cryptic things in the post-match press conference. And it'll be the start of a fantastic tour. It's also the start of a solid month of rugby. Also to be enjoyed this Saturday at 7:45. En route to Europe, New Zealand are playing Japan with a very inexperienced young team. Wales will be hosting the Scots at 4:45. England SA, as I said, at 5. And then Ireland versus Italy. Now, the great thing about this whole end of year tour is that New Zealand will play England. That'll be next weekend, the 10th of November. And then they'll also play Ireland on the 17th. Now, Ireland have beaten New Zealand. They beat them to end that world record run of theirs for most wins. They beat them in America. And they've beaten them. They've beaten big teams at home of Ireland in the last few years. And of course, I think if everything goes well for Ireland, they could be the number one ranked team in the world during the series of games right now. Into other news, the Proteas will be playing against Australia. That will start this Sunday. Now, they've got a three-match ODI series, and then they'll play a T20 at the end, just for shits and giggles. Now, of course, we're talking about the World Cup. There's also World Cup next year for the crickets, which is a big deal. It's going to be in England, and this is a big tune-up for the Proteas. They need to know who their strongest team is. Against that President's 11, they didn't have a strong team. That's probably their best team, but they play like absolute shite. So there's holes all over the place with AB not being there. Not just in the batting, of course, he adds so much to that team. Can Pfaff really pick it up again? I feel like he's almost plateaued since he did all the heroics against the Aussies. The one day team, yeah, I think the Proteas, the test team, there's always a bit of confidence around there just historically, but this ODI team, it's a bit of a yo-yo, and who really knows who the strongest team is. There's three games to try to prove that, starting on Sunday at 5:20 a.m. SA time in Perth. So SA start with a home game there, and then it gets a bit more sort of festive for them in Adelaide and Hobart. Hobart, of course, is Tasmania.
Tasmania.
Which is, from what I heard, it's a bit of a strange place to go to. Right, what else we got? Roger Federer, he is just three games away from that 100th title. Yep, he's in the quarterfinals of the Paris Masters, along with soon-to-be new world number one Novak Djokovic. So you got that to look forward to over the weekend. And in the football, there's the Telkom Knockout Cup quarterfinals this weekend. So we've got Baroka FC on Saturday versus Mamelodi Sundowns at 3, AmaZulu versus Pirates at 6, Maritzburg United at 8:15 versus the Wits, and then on Sunday, Kaizer Chiefs versus SuperSport United. Of course, the Telkom Knockout Cup is the big deal in November for local football. And then internationally, in the English Premier League, we all like watching that because that's pretty much where the biggest kind of stories come. And I think I had a meeting recently with a betting company. Some very interesting stats around that is that the biggest market for them, of course, in all betting is the English Premier League. People are so emotionally invested in this thing. So your next round of fixtures for all the big stories. Man United away to Bournemouth to kick things off on Saturday at 2:30. The big emotional tie with Leicester again playing off the horrific accident of which took the life of their owner last week. They'll be playing away at Cardiff City at 5. Otherwise, the real big one to look out for is Arsenal versus Liverpool. Arsenal, I think, have had a very sort of charmed run of late. It did come to shit last week when they drew to Crystal Palace. They conceded a late goal there, which ended a fantastic run in all competitions. But against Liverpool at home, granted they were playing at home, this is going to be the biggest test of the season for them. Man City will be playing on Sunday, but now their talented ginger Kevin De Bruyne picked up an injury yesterday in that League Cup that no one really cares about. But they'll be playing against Southampton, so expect goals galore there. And the final match of the weekend will be Chelsea versus Crystal Palace at 6 o'clock on Sunday. Sheepers, I've rattled through that, haven't I?
You did.
The European Tour has the Turkish Airlines Open as part of their whole race to Dubai final series. Paul Dunn currently in the lead there, -7, with Thunder Bay Olsson -6, and Justin Rose -6 as well. So star-studded field there at a very exciting golf course. And on the USPGA Tour, it's the Shriners Hospital for Children Open.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
What a long title.
Well, it used to be the Shriners Hospital for Children Open, hosted by Justin Timberlake, and then he kind of lost interest or something. But Peter Uihlein is leading there. Seth Reeves, there's some fantastic names on the USPGA Tour, if nothing else. Seth Reeves at -7, and Harold Varner Jr., the third.
Wow, great.
Carry the four. He's at -6, so you've got all that to look forward to. There might be F1, but maybe next week as well. Either way, Hamilton's won that, so we can kind of give it a skip. That is your sport for this big weekend ahead.
Very nice. There will be no said by Sia this morning because Sia's not here. He's in PE. But we're going to check in with Ken Verriges, who started Whiskey Live, among other incredible successes in business. And he's going to join us just after 7. Plus, we'll take your calls. You know what to do. 0861-555-189. Nola's waiting to take your calls. And we've got messages on 0797482099. Zero. Those are the numbers you can get hold of us on. Let us know what you're up to this Friday morning. Be keen to find out what's interesting you and what you want to talk about. You know, you can always change direction here. You can always tell us what you're more interested in and we'll go straight to that. Usually that is a better formula than for me to just come in here and start yammering away. CliffCentral.com